Joey Block. This week we have a special edition for you. For the entirety of the show, we are going to be looking back at my past conversations with the top four candidates for U.S. Senate here in New Jersey. So that would be Curtis Bashaw, Congressman Andy Kim, Christina Khalil, and Ken Kaplan. So we're going to look back at those conversations as we head into this pivotal Senate race on top of a massive election where things are really tight at the presidential level. And we are just days away from Election Day. And while much of the focus has been on the presidential race here in New Jersey, voters are weighing who their next senator is going to be. In what is traditionally a non-competitive and uneventful race, the battle for the Senate seat this year has been full of twists and turns that could ultimately determine who wins the race. It all started back in the fall of 2022, if you can believe it or not, when the news broke Senator Bob Menendez was under federal investigation for a third time. This caused Roselle Park Mayor Joe Signorello and social worker Christina Khalil to jump into the race to challenge Menendez. Nearly a year later, both candidates left the Democratic field for Senate, and Menendez, along with his own wife, Nadine, were indicted on federal bribery charges. A day later, South Jersey Congressman Andy Kim launched his campaign to take on Menendez in the Democratic primary. Soon after, New Jersey First Lady Tammy Murphy announced her own bid for the Senate seat. What was expected to be a competitive Democratic primary came to a screeching halt when Congressman Kim filed a lawsuit to toss out the traditional county organizational line, which could have benefited Tammy Murphy. And for context, that line is what is essentially allows party leaders in each county to give preferential ballot positioning for the candidates they like the best. Kim was victorious in his lawsuit, eliminating the line in this year's Democratic primary, causing Murphy to drop out just days before the filing deadline. At the same time, Menendez announced he would not seek re-election as a Democrat this year, but left the door open for a possible independent bid. Once he was convicted on 16 counts, including bribery, extortion, wire fraud, obstruction of justice, and acting as a foreign agent, it became clear to Menendez that it was time to move on. So Menendez announced his resignation effective August 20th, essentially ending his chances of re-election. Andy Kim went on to win the Democratic primary and now faces real estate developer Curtis Bashaw in the general election. Polls show Kim is in the lead and is favored to win, with the most recent polling from Signal finding he has a 19-point edge on Bashaw. So he is right now the current favorite in this race and is widely expected by many political pundits out there to win this thing, if not run away with it. But previous polling has shown this race is much more competitive than meets the eye, with some of these polls showing that this race is in the single digits. Now, a lot of this was internal polling by Republicans, but there was one public poll that showed this as well. Now, a Republican, it's important to note here, hasn't won a Senate seat here in the state of New Jersey since 1972. That's the year Richard Nixon was reelected president, so it's been a long time. But Bashaw says he's the guy who can break the chain. I spoke with him about his plan to take on Kim, as well as what he would do in the Senate. So let's revisit how we got here. So you won the GOP primary by just about 8 points. Former President Trump endorsed your primary opponent, Mendham Mayor Christine Serrano Glasner. There were a number of voters who were skeptical of your conservative credentials. Are you confident you'll be able to bring those voters into the fold? And if you are, how do you plan to do so ahead of the general election?
Well, we are campaigning all over the state, and the Republican Party is united as it has ever been. We went to all the counties since the primary that we did not win and where we were not the endorsed candidate, and we know that we have unanimity amongst the Republican Party. There is an absolute hunger for change in this election, and we're not going to let a few odds and ends keep us divided as Republicans. You know, Mr. Trump endorsed my opponent primarily because her husband worked for him. I understand loyalty. We're well past that, and we're all coordinating together as we work to win this election in November.
Now, you said that this endorsement mainly had to deal with the fact that her husband had a previous history of working for the former president. You did win that GOP nomination now, despite the former president taking a pass on you in the primary. So now the nomination's been set here. You are supporting Trump in this year's presidential election. As you know, he has influence over GOP voters, especially when it comes to candidates that they, you know, some voters may not be too keen on supporting initially. Are you seeking his endorsement?
Our campaigns are in very close coordination. We've been working together since the primary, and we have, you know, the full support of the Trump campaign, and we are working together to deliver New Jersey for Republicans.
Now, I know you're trying to work hand in hand here. We obviously had State Senator Mike Testa on, who is the chairman of your campaign, a couple weeks back, talking about this. But in regards to getting that stamp of approval, I know from the infrastructure standpoint, behind the scenes, it's kind of a lot of the same thing. But in terms of that public stamp of approval, can we expect to see that from the former president before Election Day?
Well, listen, we were with him in Deal at a fundraising event. There's a lot of support there and shout outs. And I believe we have his support, and I'm sure he will continue to express that.
Has he mentioned anything about putting out like a Truth Social post or anything mentioning your name?
I have not talked to him about that, no.
Now, going back to the overall winning over voters who you need to get this coalition together, because you know how it is. Democrats obviously have that voter registration advantage, so you're going to have to get in all the Republicans you can, plus some people who are in the middle who may not necessarily associate with either party. What's your message to those in particular who are voting conservative? They like a lot of the Republican Party's doing, but they might see you and be like, I don't know, should I go for this guy? Should I not? What's your message to conservatives out there for why they should vote for you?
Well, I'm a conservative. I'm a lifelong businessman. I've created 1,000 jobs over 35 years, starting with 20 jobs. We've made a payroll every 2 weeks for 35 years. We've built a business and understand how to live by a budget. You know, I went to the border, saw with my own eyes 60-some people walk across an unfinished section of the wall after Joe Biden's day one pronouncement when he took office. And, you know, we watched people from Syria, China, Ecuador, Venezuela just come into our country as if they were lining up for Space Mountain at Disney World. You know, we have to have a secure border and stop this illegal migration into our country. It's scaring New Jerseyans. It's making them feel insecure in their communities. So our message has been right on point as it relates to what conservatives are looking for. Our opponent, Andy Kim, is so far to the left, he would be on the far shoulder of the outer lane of the New Jersey Turnpike. I mean, this guy votes. He's a member of the caucus. He votes with the squad. He's soft on the economy. He's soft on border security. He's soft on Israel. So we believe that the contrast is clear in this race, and that conservatives are going to vote for us. And we also believe we're going to pull independent, unaffiliated voters and Democrats. This is no longer your grandmother's Democratic Party. It's a radicalized party. And so we believe that even mainstream Democrats are going to rather have someone who understands that the border needs to be secure, that we need to curtail illegal immigration, that we need to support law enforcement. So we feel like our conservative credentials are clear and that other voters are seeing that there's an alternative to a far left Senate candidate, and that their choice will also come our way.
As I mentioned previously, your campaign chairman, State Senator Mike Testa, was on the show a couple of weeks ago. In that appearance, he compared you to former President Trump. He says you're a businessman like Trump. Now, as you both know, you and the former president both have experience as real estate developers. Can we expect to see you as a senator be in the mold of Trump, or more of a guy who's a bit independent-minded?
Well, I think Trump is also independent-minded. Trump speaks his name and does his thing. You know, he has built lots of successful businesses. He also owns hotels, as I do. You know, I've renovated lots of historic properties. I understand how the economy works, how hard it is, how these one-size-fits-all regulations are strangling our business. I love that President Trump, in his first term, took that federal registry and tried to get rid of all these absurd regulations that are strangling our businesses. So I think we are very similarly molded. We're outsiders to politics. I jumped in later in life, as did he. And we bring common sense values to looking at how to make government work better for the working class Americans.
If former President Trump does win re-election and goes into the White House and you win the Senate seat here in New Jersey, can he rely on you as a reliable Republican vote for whatever his agenda items may be, whether it is tax reform, whether it's the border, etc.?
Look, I'm a Republican and I'm supporting President Trump because we agree on most of the issues. Nobody agrees on every single issue, but we're going to make smart decisions on what's good for the country. And I'm, you know, going to be part of the Republican caucus. So I can't predict what, you know, votes are going to come up or not come up, but I'm an independent, free-thinking person that's going to make smart decisions that benefit our state and that work for the good of all New Jerseyans.
Now, as you know, your opponent currently serves in the House. He sits on the Armed Services Committee as well as Foreign Affairs. If you got in the Senate, what committees would you like to become part of on day one?
I'm very interested in the Entrepreneurship and Small Business Committee. I am a small business person that built my business over time to being a medium-sized business. I understand the headaches that small business people go through, that the burdens of one-size-fits-all regulation that hurts them and harms them. I want to be a voice for small business. You know, New Jersey has over 500 towns. We have thousands and thousands of small businesses. I've spent a good part of the last 2 weeks going to see businesses all over our state, talking to people about their needs. So I'm very passionate and experienced in this realm, and that's something that interests me greatly.
Another thing that Harris has spoken about as of late is coming out in favor of no tax on tips, echoing a policy pushed by former President Trump. If you win in November, there's a good chance you may be faced with legislation that eliminates taxes on tips made by restaurant and hospitality workers. As someone who knows the hospitality business pretty well, is this a proposal you could get behind?
Look, I am always for lower taxes and especially for service workers. My one concern with the proposal is that it doesn't go far enough. I mean, I'm in this business. I run restaurants and hotels. And if we give a tax break to the front of the house employees who are often tipped, we don't want to inadvertently discriminate against the back of the house folks in the kitchen. So we've got to look at it in a holistic way and make sure that it's equitable for all the people in the service industry. But what is absolutely a terrible idea is Kamala Harris tying her parroting of Trump's interesting suggestion and adding to it that we need to raise the minimum wage for service workers. Let me tell you, that is a disastrous policy. Raising the minimum wage for tipped workers to the minimum federal hourly rate is equivalent to a 245% increase on the taxes that employers, small business owners, have to pay. So to me, raising the minimum wage on service workers is a DOA situation, and how we adjudicate tax breaks for service workers needs to be vetted.
You said that this doesn't go far enough. Now, although you don't agree with the vice president in raising the minimum wage for people making tips, you say the people in the back who are working in the kitchen who don't necessarily get those tips, they need to have some form of relief financially on their end. What do you propose needs to be done about that? Because you're a guy who has built these kind of businesses, so you know what it takes to get this done. What type of tax break could you give them? Is it just based on a certain income level? Is it based on a certain profession, hours worked? How would you handle that?
Well, I think it needs to be looked at carefully, because the one thing you don't want to do is give a tax break to every server and bartender and have the chef and the line cooks in the back not having a tax break of their own. So there needs to be some equality in how it's played out. You know, often government does these one-size-fits-all regulations that have unintended consequences. So the important thing here is, I think the president is correct in trying to reduce the tax burden for service workers. I think it's silly to tax tips that, you know, people get in tip jars and coffee shops. I think that you need to make sure in you know, career waiters and waitresses working in restaurant settings that it's equitable for all the team and is distributed fairly in a way that gives all of them a benefit. These people are working hard at lower wages. And, you know, if we're giving out tax breaks, it needs to be fair.
Tax policy has been a cornerstone of former President Trump's campaign. He reportedly wants to renew the tax cuts he signed into law back in 2017 if he returns to the White House. The funding for the plan came from eliminating the state local tax deduction. You have said that this needs to be restored. Would you vote for a tax bill that doesn't include putting SALT back in place?
Well, first of all, I absolutely support keeping in place the tax cuts that President Trump delivered in his term. I think, you know, I, as a private sector guy, am much better taking the earnings that we make and investing them in growth and in our economy than the government is. So I'm for tax breaks 100%. I think New Jersey, we are 49th in what we get back from the federal government out of 50 states. We're third or fourth in what we contribute to the federal government. That gap is burdensome. We know we have amongst the highest taxes in the nation in New Jersey. So I've suggested that we relook at the SALT deduction to get some equity for our state against the others, especially given the fact that we are a major donor state to the federal government and subsidizing others. So I would vote absolutely to extend those tax cuts. And I also would advocate that we look at the SALT deduction, but they are not married in my mind.
So you, in theory, could vote for two separate bills here. If they came out with renewing the tax bill, you know, the tax cuts from 2017, you would vote on that first and then maybe handle SALT down the road?
Absolutely.
And before we go here, there is one other tax proposal Trump has floated, and that would be exempting Social Security monthly payments. That would be tax-exempt income for senior citizens. That's what he has proposed. Is that an idea you can get behind?
Listen, I think that I'm all for people, senior citizens, keeping their Social Security without paying tax. We definitely have to make sure, however, that fund stays solvent. We know it has to stay solvent for all those people who have already paid into it, who are invested in the system. So I would absolutely vote for legislation that makes sure that we could do those two things together.
All right. Well, we'll have to see where that goes, as well as your campaign. New Jersey Republican Senate candidate Curtis Bashaw, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Happy to be here, and thanks for having me. Look forward to chatting some more.
If the race for Senate does end up being more competitive than recent polls are showing, third-party candidates could make the difference of who ultimately wins or loses. One of those candidates on the ballot this year is Libertarian Ken Kaplan. Kaplan has run for a number of offices over the years, with this bid marking his 12th campaign in his political career. Despite the uphill battle he faces, Kaplan hopes by running this race, he'll be able to make an impact not only in this election, but as well as the state's political system as a whole. I had the chance to talk to him about this and more. You're currently running for Senate as a Libertarian. What made you decide to jump into this race?
Well, actually, the party asked me to at our convention. And having done it before, I was willing. And I'm trying to get the Libertarian ideas out there.
You've mentioned that you've done this before. There has been a number of times you've run for races over the years and you've lost all of them. Why is this time different?
Well, this time isn't different in that respect. I'm going to lose again. I'm confident in that. But, you know, somebody has to carry the torch. Our ideas are different than the Democrats and Republicans. We believe in individual liberty. We believe in personal freedom, whether it's in your personal life or your economic life. And neither the Democrats nor the Republicans really subscribe to that.
Now, there's only been one candidate not affiliated with either major political party who has been elected here in the state beyond local offices in recent times. How can a third party candidate break through and define that history? Because you say yourself, the likelihood of you winning is probably slim to none at this point, just getting the message out there. But what are the building blocks required for a candidate like yourself to eventually be victorious at statewide offices?
Well, for one thing, it might be great if we had an even playing field. In other words, you have, you know, Major League Baseball. There's always a team that doesn't do very well, but they play by the same rules. Okay. We play by different rules. And why is that? Well, the Democrats and Republicans set the rules. They don't want any competition. They don't want anybody to join their little monopoly or duopoly, as it is, of governing the state. For instance, libertarians are not considered a party under New Jersey law, an official party, because New Jersey law defines that as an organization that gets at least 10% of the total vote cast in the last statewide election for General Assembly. Now, that means running, I guess it's about 80 candidates, and they all have to do reasonably well so that collectively they get 10% of the vote. Well, that's virtually impossible. It has not happened in New Jersey since that constitution was adopted in the 1950s. There are some other states where it's as simple as any one statewide candidate getting 2 or 2.5% of the vote. And in some states, whenever the Libertarians do rise to the level of major party, they change the rules. In New York, our last gubernatorial candidate garnered over 50,000 votes. In fact, he gathered over 70,000 votes, which at that time, 50,000 votes was the requirement to be an official party. They changed the rules and made it an astronomical number and made the signature requirement very high to even get on the ballot. So this year, our presidential candidate will not be on the ballot in New York. That's only one of three states where our presidential candidate, Chase Oliver, will not be on the ballot. In New Jersey, libertarians and other third parties can't be on the first or second line or column of the ballot. That's reserved for Democrats or Republicans. There's a drawing between them, and then there's a secondary drawing for the other parties. And since the county clerks have a great deal of discretion in arranging the ballot, they don't even have to put all our candidates on the same line. So in Morris County, I'm on the third line, and my presidential candidate's on the seventh line. So there's a lot of unfairness in the system. And that's one reason that's held us back. Now, how can we overcome that? Well, some states have initiative where the citizens can propose a new law and get it on the ballot. New Jersey doesn't have that. So we are at the mercy of the Democrats and Republicans in the state legislature as far as that goes. So it's a steep hill to climb, and it will probably require, say, a multimillionaire who's a libertarian who decides to run for office and can outspend the Democrats and Republicans. And that hasn't happened yet in this state.
Now, many people out there might be saying that supporting you is a waste of their vote, given the challenges that you've laid out and the grip that the two major parties have on our political system. For someone out there who is not happy with either party, why should they vote for you?
Well, they might sleep better at night knowing that they voted for somebody they actually liked, whether it's the Libertarian or the Green or somebody else, but they might sleep better at night. And of course, in New Jersey, it's a blue state. So statewide, it looks like the Democrats are going to win no matter what at this juncture. County, local elections, it's a different story. But I would say, if I were to predict, I would say that Andy Kim is going to win this election by a landslide. I think I have as much or maybe more name recognition than the Republican candidate because I've run so many times. So Andy Kim's going to win the election. And I don't think you have to worry about that a vote for Ken Kaplan is going to change that outcome. So I think you can confidently vote for me if you like what I stand for.
A big issue for New Jersey voters is the state and local tax deduction. Under current tax law, property owners can only deduct a maximum of $10,000 in their federal filings. As a senator, in your Libertarian brand, would you support reinstating SALT in its entirety?
Well, if we're stuck with the current income tax code and can only make minor adjustments, yes, I would. But basically, I would throw out the entire income tax code. I am a lawyer by education, though I haven't practiced in many years. And when I went to law school, we had a single volume that was the tax code and two volumes that were the regulations. And I don't know, there's like, I don't know how many volumes of regulations now. I went to law school I graduated in 1972. The tax code is basically a hodgepodge of rules and regulations that favor some individuals and some groups and hurt other individuals and groups, and who it helps and who it hurts changes depending on the administration. It's just a mess. We really need to throw it out and start over and not have an income tax.
You mentioned the fact that you would eventually like to see the federal income tax completely eliminated. Both Donald Trump and Vice President Harris have come out in favor of no taxes on tips, specifically in regards to those made by hospitality and service workers. Chances are, regardless of who wins the race for the White House in November, this is going to be a piece of legislation that is going to become before the Senate. If you were a senator, would you vote for that bill?
I would vote for it, although it might have unintended consequences to those people who rely on tips, because when they go to apply for mortgages or other loans, it might not look like they have enough income to qualify. So it could potentially hurt them. But yeah, I mean, libertarians have been leaving what we call tip cards for years in restaurants, which basically say what I'm leaving you is a free will offering. It's not compensation for services, and therefore you don't have to pay taxes on it, because that's our belief. We don't think they ever should have had to pay taxes on these on their tips.
The social safety net has become a topic of conversation as of late, as now we've seen recent reports that the increase for the annual amount of Social Security that people are going to be getting, it's the smallest increase seen in 3 years. The presidential nominee for your party, Chase Oliver, was on the show a couple weeks ago and said he wants to sunset Social Security if elected. On your website, you say, quote, changing the rules on retirees and those close to retirement would be a violation of their trust, close quote. Is getting rid of Social Security the right idea?
Well, as I said, those who are already collecting it or close to collecting it, they've been counting on it, and we certainly shouldn't take it away from them. But for younger people, it is kind of a Ponzi scheme. I mean, it's not guaranteed. The amounts are not guaranteed. We're talking about a small increase this year. It could just as easily be a small decrease. You're not guaranteed a set amount. You're not guaranteed a set percentage of your salary when you were working, adjusted for inflation. There are no guarantees at all as to the amounts that you will receive from Social Security. So it's a risky system, and it's not fiscally sound in terms of the income from the invested funds paying the beneficiaries. It's just not a sound fund. So I think younger people should be given other options, investing in their own pensions, private pensions, insured pensions, but they want to have different options because this is not a sound plan.
You say they should be given different options, but should Social Security be thrown out altogether? I mean, I know for the people that are about to get it and are have it now, you don't want to screw those people over. But But what about the people who are not on it now and probably are not going to be on it for the next 20 years, et cetera? Do you want that program to eventually not exist anymore?
I think it would be better if people took responsibility for their own futures. And if they didn't, they would have to suffer the consequences. Now, I don't think those consequences would be all that severe. Say somebody didn't save for their retirement. Libertarians have a much more optimistic view of human nature than Democrats and Republicans. Democrats and Republicans think unless the law makes people do something, they're not going to do it. Well, I mean, people are charitable. People care. People are not going to let people starve if they can help it. It's just not going to happen. And also, people have children. I mean, before there was such a thing as Social Security, children helped older people and other family members. And people put money aside, or maybe they didn't retire so young. But, it wasn't like everybody just died when they retired because they didn't have any way to support themselves.
Former President Trump says he wants to make Social Security tax exempt for seniors. Do you agree?
Yes, I do agree, because you've already paid taxes your whole life. You paid taxes on the income, that you've earned your whole life. Yes, I think you should be exempt.
Let's move to the war in Israel. Obviously, it is a subject that is a big role in the presidential race, as well as an issue that is consuming much of foreign policy across the world. The U.S. is sending a terminal high-altitude area defense battery to Israel, along with troops, to operate the anti-missile system. This is on top of the small number of troops they sent to the region just a few weeks ago. How involved should the U.S. be in this conflict?
Well, the United States should not be involved in foreign conflicts. But we are because of treaties and alliances and whatnot. We're very much involved. I think it would be unfair to radically change our policy in the middle of a war. Now, over time, we need to disengage. We should not be sending foreign aid anywhere. We should be, non-government organizations certainly can help abroad, as can individual citizens. But the government of the United States should not be sending millions and millions of dollars abroad. Now, a lot of people think we give a lot of aid to Israel. We do. However, the second biggest beneficiary of American foreign aid is Egypt. And collectively, the Arab states get more foreign aid than Israel does. And we give foreign aid elsewhere in the world. It should all stop. We have plenty of needs in this country for that money. And as far as getting involved in foreign conflicts, we just shouldn't be making enemies around the world. We should be a neutral party. We should help mediate situations to the best of our ability, but we shouldn't be actively involved. Now, that's my political view as a candidate. As an individual, Israel was attacked by terrorists. The terrorists are still holding many hostages. Some are even American citizens. And they're looking for a ceasefire. Well, they want a ceasefire. They got to return the hostages. Then we can talk about a ceasefire. But again, that's the business of the Israelis and their enemies. We should help with mediation, but we should not be directly involved in this conflict.
You brought up the ceasefire that a lot of people are calling for, including many in the Democratic Party. The presidential nominee for your party, Chase Oliver, has called for a ceasefire in Israel. Just last weekend, Hezbollah conducted a drone strike in central Israel, killing 40 people. You say there shouldn't be a ceasefire till we get the hostages back. Does that mean there should be no ceasefire right now? The fighting should continue?
I think that should be left to Israel. And I strongly support Israel personally. As a Jew myself, and knowing the history of the Holocaust and having a close friend who's a Holocaust survivor, that happened. And Hitler was able to annihilate those millions of Jews because Jews had no safe place to go. Israel must remain in existence and it must remain strong.
Democrats are currently facing opposition from their left flank. Progressives have criticized the party for its stances on issues like Israel and corruption. This has led many of them to leave the party or, at the very least, not support several Democratic candidates running for office this year. Christina Khalil is one of those people who initially ran in the Democratic primary against Menendez, but has since left the party and is now a member of the Green Party in her bid for Senate. I interviewed her about this very topic and her Senate campaign. Take a listen. You were previously running in the Democratic primary back when now former Senator Menendez was in the race, but now you're campaigning on the Green Party ticket. What made you decide to switch?
So when I was actually speaking to people in the Democratic Party in New Jersey and people, different chair members, and trying to gain their support, in my face, they were smiling, you know, at me, and they said, we love it. We love that there's a woman running and everything. And then when I started talking about possible endorsements and stuff like that, they said that they're not going to support anybody that stands against their friend Menendez, and that they pick their people, and they weren't really interested in my progressive policies. And they said, but it's great that you're running, but we already picked Menendez. And I was really shocked. I was just like, you know, he already had his first federal trial, and you guys still gave him, with all the evidence and all the serious concerns, you guys rewarded him with the Senate seat again. And then here we are, and he's facing a second federal trial, and then you guys are still focusing on rewarding him, but then you're putting the voters last when you should be putting the voters first. And we shouldn't be focusing on friendship when it's business, and the voters are supposed to be left out last. So I said, I can't do this with this party, because I thought at that point you could change the party within. And then I was just like, at that moment I woke up, I was like, you can't do that. That's unrealistic. Maybe in another state, but definitely not in New Jersey. And then I went to the Green Party.
So now you're in the Green Party. As you know, third-party candidacies are notoriously difficult, especially here in New Jersey. With Menendez officially out of the race, the focus has shifted to Congressman Andy Kim and real estate developer Curtis Bashaw. As a third-party candidate, how will you break through?
So as a third-party candidate, what I did when I switched, I made a deal with I only had one condition with the Green Party. I said, give me a full ballot of congressional candidates. Without a full ballot, there is no chance. And everything is completely grassroots. We are on the ground. We are still working. We're working with a ton of volunteers, and we are encouraging more people every day to volunteer. So David Wildstein, I've reached out and other people have reached out on my behalf to try and get me included into the debate, but it's all about money. And now the thing with Andy Kim and Bashaw is that they take corporate donations. Of course, they're going to have millions of dollars. And the difference with me is I don't take any corporate donations. It's only grassroots donations. So it's really the working class people that are supporting me. And even if the donation isn't money, people will offer their time, or people will offer their skill set with designing graphics, or they'll offer a space and do different types of donations. So it's literally all about word of mouth, and it's going out there and really pushing for progressive policies and getting the message out there that there is a full slate of new candidates that people can actually vote for. It's not just a down ballot for either Dem or Republicans.
Going back to mobilizing voters, because as you know, that's something you're going to have to do here if you are to ultimately win this seat. Because as you know, I don't have to really lay it out for you too much, but essentially it's an uphill battle. If you just look at the numbers here, recent voter registration shows only a little more than 11,000 people in the state are rank and file members of the Green Party, compared to over 2.4 million who are unaffiliated and more than 2.5 million who are declared Democrats. So essentially, you'd have to bring a large portion of the unaffiliated into your camp, in addition to the Green Party, and then also pull some people away from the Democrats, if not take some Republicans away. How do you plan to overcome that math?
Well, I've actually been doing that right now, and I've been doing that for a while, and we do have some Republicans, and I do have some Democrats that are voting for me. It's sharing the policies and the platform and actually engaging and having conversations. So between people phone banking and also mailers going out and multiple people doing events, because I can't be at every place at once, So we do have people going to events, speaking on my behalf or canvassing on my behalf, and just really meeting with people. And we're going in areas that Democrats wouldn't go into, and same thing with Republicans. So it's really going into the vulnerable communities and really speaking broadly to people, because everyone's voice deserves to be heard. So I try not to view it as parties. I try to view people as individual people. So minusing the party, because I've even gotten Democrats. I got an endorsement from a progressive Dem. I've gotten actually quite a few endorsements from progressive Dems. I've gotten an endorsement from a libertarian in New Jersey, and I've gotten spoken very highly of by different Republicans. And there are progressive Dems and Republicans that I can speak highly of in New Jersey as well.
You mentioned how you're going into these communities and talking to people who, you know, traditionally may not vote Democrat or Republican, or there's some cases where you are talking to people that are mm-hmm. part of the two-party system, and you're trying to get them to come your direction. Are you actively trying to register these voters as members of the Green Party to build up that base, or are you just more of trying to get them to vote for you as a candidate and hoping that by voting for you, it kind of trickles down to the down ballot?
So essentially what I'm doing is I'm, again, focusing on the people, not the party. And I want, so a lot, there are millions of people out there that are feeling so hopeless with the failed two-party system, the continued lies and everything. And right now I want to show people through action and get people to vote for me. And I also share, you know, the entire platform, like I'll share something from me and then I'll share something from a different congressional candidate. But the goal is for people to have hope. That's where my focus is to give people hope and let them know there is another solution. And I don't want to give people any pressure when it comes to registering for a party, because I feel like that will naturally happen after.
Shifting gears here, Secretary of State Antony Blinken says Israel has accepted a ceasefire and hostage deal. He's called for Hamas to do the same. This comes as the U.S. has approved $20 billion in arms sales to Israel, including fighter jets and air-to-air missiles. It comes as some members of Congress have called for an immediate ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war, as well as for the U.S. to stop providing aid to the Jewish state. It's even trickled over to the DNC, where we saw protests take place for people who were critical of the way the Democratic Party has been handling it, either people who are pro-Israel saying they haven't done enough to support the Jewish state, or on the other end where they feel like the Palestinians are not getting enough support from the party. In your view, what should America's role be in this war?
In my view, the billions of debt that we are accruing for this war and the conflict between Israel and Palestine, that money needs to go to the American people first, because we have a crisis. Every water system is full of chemicals. We need to clean our water. We need to provide better, healthier food. Now we have a recent outbreak of monkeypox, so we need to reinvest into making sure we get people healthy and safe. We have a homeless crisis. Suicide is at an ultimate, all-time high. We have elderly people who are getting kicked out of their homes because they can't pay the new crazy rents. So that money should be invested into the American people. That's where my view is. We shouldn't be involved in international issues where we're becoming the number one enemy of the entire world. And I want to say it's the Israeli government. It's not the Jewish people that's causing the problems. Just like it's the American government that causes problems. It's not the American people. So I want to make sure that everyone separates them, because I know so many wonderful Jewish people, and I would never, ever associate, and I know great Israelis too, I would never associate them with what their government is doing. It's just very, very poor leadership, just like our country has very poor leadership. So we need our country to focus on the people, and we also have Israelis protesting their government in Israel. We need their government to focus on the needs of their people and listen to their people. Their people want this conflict to end. They want peace. The Palestinians want peace. We want peace, and we want our leaders, everyone in the world wants the leaders to focus on them. So when Putin is making jokes saying, oh, you should focus on the American people because they're homeless and struggling, it's like, dang, that really hurts. The leader's making fun of how poor a leadership is, that they're letting the Americans suffer. So I could say that's where my stance is.
So do you believe that the U.S. needs to stop sending money to Israel?
Yeah, put that money back into the American people.
And what about a ceasefire? Does that need to be declared in this war? Do they need to stop all the fighting going on over there?
Yep, 100%. They have to stop the cease fighting. I mean, we need to have a ceasefire, and they have to stop the fighting because the people, all we should do is facilitate. The U.S. needs to stay out of this. We need a new government in the U.S., and we need a new government in Israel, too. And we need the far, far extremists that are running the government in both places. We need people that are ethical, that are reasonable, that are capable of having conversations like leaders, because we don't need leaders that put the sacrifice of their citizens before anything else. We need leaders that put the safety of their citizens first. So too much blood has been spilled, there's been so many preventable deaths, and we need to also have a full investigation. I want to know where all my tax dollars went. I want full transparency. I learned a couple weeks ago we had $53 million missing, unaccounted for, in the state of New Jersey for the last decade for mental health. $53 million that they can't account for. I was appalled learning that in the last 10 years, and we have a mental health crisis in New Jersey. Transparency. I want to know who's not reporting the money. I want to know where the money went, and we need to start holding these people accountable, because at the end of the day, they pocket it, they embezzle it, no one's being held accountable, and I know Menendez is not the only person that has skeletons in his closet, and I'm sure other people do as well. So it shouldn't just be Menendez being kicked out and put on trial. We need an entire new government that puts America first.
The county organizational line has also played a role in this year's race. What was expected to be a competitive Democratic primary turned out to be a total dud when Congressman Andy Kim filed a federal lawsuit claiming him and his fellow plaintiffs were at an unfair disadvantage because of the line saying it was unconstitutional. They asked a federal judge to expedite a case already in motion in federal court that would abolish the county line. That judge did rule in Kim's favor, making the line obsolete just for this year's Democratic primary and not on the Republican side and not permanently. But it serves as a preview of what's to come. As for the congressman, he is now going up against Curtis Bashaw in a race he's largely favored to win. And in fact, many pundits out there say he's definitely going to win. I had the chance to catch up with him about this and more. Give it a listen.
You're currently running for Senate. What would your priorities be in the Senate on day one?
Well, my priorities are going to be, you know, the same approach that I've taken in the House of Representatives, which is, you know, focused on what I'm hearing from the people. You know, I've now done 78 town halls as a member of Congress. You know, my job is to listen to people and what their concerns are. And right now, you know, the top thing that I hear about is about high costs. It's about affordability. It's about, you know, housing costs, transportation, healthcare costs, which is why, you know, I've spent so much of my time in Congress, you know, focus on these types of issues. You know, I was leading the charge on lowering prescription drug medication costs for many Americans. You know, I authored the legislation that would cap out-of-pocket costs for seniors on Medicare when it comes to their prescription drugs. Also a $35 cap for insulin for seniors. You know, we're going to continue to push on that, as well as, you know, take other actions to, you know, hopefully help lower, you know, housing costs, education costs. So that's a lot of what I'll be focused on if elected to the U.S. Senate.
You're currently serving on the House Armed Services
and foreign affairs committees. What committee would you like to become a part of in the Senate if elected?
Yeah, you know, I'm still thinking that through. Like I said, you know, I want to make sure that I can prioritize what the people of New Jersey want. You know, I've been focused on a lot of national security committees because, you know, I've worked in national security before. I served as a civilian advisor in Afghanistan, worked at the Pentagon. So certainly want to make sure we're, you know, doing what we can to keep our, you know, our country safe. But I've also focused a lot on veterans issues, on military personnel, on mental health support, suicide prevention for our veterans. You know, and so those are some of the actions that, you know, I hope to continue on in one of the national security committees. But, you know, as I said, you know, I'm very focused on our economy, very focused on small business issues. As I've been on the small business committee in the House of Representatives, I would want to continue some type of work in that way, whether that's on, you know, the Commerce Committee or something else. So I haven't made up my mind yet. You know, I don't want to get ahead of myself. And, you know, that's also a conversation that I would, if elected, have to have with Senator Booker to make sure that New Jersey has the coverage that it needs. But I want to make sure I'm choosing things based off of what I can deliver for New Jersey.
Last time you were on the show, you said you weren't focused on endorsements, but didn't rule it out. You worked in the Obama administration on the national security front and were previously endorsed by the former president and the current one, Joe Biden. You endorsed Vice President Harris very early on in the process after Biden dropped out. Are you seeking former President Obama and or Kamala Harris's endorsement?
Honestly, I have not sought anyone's endorsements, you know, in this process of late. You know, I don't know. It's just not something that I've been really interested in. You know, I really wanted to show the people of New Jersey that, you know, I'm trying to do a different kind of politics, you know, something that's really ground up, bottom up, you know, very much the kind of grassroots approach that we promised that we would do. You know, when I stepped up to run for Senate, I said I'm going to do things differently because, you know, I feel like our politics have become so broken in New Jersey. So I've really tried to shy away from and not get caught up in sort of this endorsement, you know, kind of approach, that top-down approach that, you know, I've seen and frankly have done before. So, you know, I want to try something different and really just kind of run on my record, on my ideas. And so far, I feel like that's been resonating with people. I mean, I think they're excited about what I'm bringing to the table and that I'm trying to do this on my own 2 feet and I'm trying to do this on my own.
So just to be clear, you're not seeking any of the big Democratic endorsements that some other candidates have sought for in the past?
No. Yeah, I've not asked for, you know, any endorsements from Democratic leaders either in New Jersey or frankly around the country. You know, I've just been focused on running this race on my own and having the voters be able to look at what I bring to the table on my record.
Your opponent, Curtis Bashaw, has criticized you for not coming out more forcefully when your fellow Democrats were calling on President Biden to drop out of the race. At the time, you said you had concerns and were still thinking it through. Do you regret not calling for Biden to step aside, especially since he ended up doing so and now Vice President Harris is your party's nominee?
No, no regrets about that at all. I mean, you know, I had you know, previous experience working under President Biden when he was the vice president. You know, I've had a chance to work alongside him for a long time. And, you know, I wanted to make sure that, you know, any concerns that I had, I could raise with him directly, which I did. So, you know, in terms of the public matter, you know, I felt like, you know, I was able to, you know, raise that. Yes, you know, I think this is something that should be thought through as a Democratic Party in terms of how best to be able to step up to run against Donald Trump. And look, you know, I mean, I think that really shows the difference of the parties. And with Mr. Bashaw just continuing to wholeheartedly endorse Donald Trump, you know, what we see very starkly now with Kamala Harris in the race, you know, just how out of touch Donald Trump is, just how unfit for office he is. And Mr. Bashaw is now in the situation where, you know, he has to answer for, you know, all the crazy things that Donald Trump's saying. So, you know, I look forward to him being able to explain why he continues to stand by Donald Trump.
Let's talk about taxes. Harris has recently come out in favor of no tax on tips echoing a policy pushed by former President Trump. If you win in November, there's a good chance you may have to, you may be faced with legislation that eliminates taxes on tips made by hospitality and service workers. Is that a proposal you could get behind?
I haven't seen the details of it yet, you know, in terms of, you know, how much that would cost, you know, how many people it would affect. You know, what I am focused on is, you know, making sure that we don't have, you know, more of these tax cuts that Trump has done for, you know, multimillionaires and billionaires. And, you know, want to make sure that the middle class is protected, you know, and certainly, you know, not just those with tip wages, but writ large. And how do we make sure that, you know, we can protect our middle class, be able to lower, you know, lower taxes for them, you know, be able to make sure we can lower costs for their, you know, their lives. So that's what I want to focus in on. In particular, we have to make sure we stop this salt tax cap that's been hurting so many New Jersey families. You know, again, that was something put in place by Donald Trump a couple years back. And, you know, we're seeing that expire. We have to make sure that that doesn't come back. So those have been my top focuses. You know, I have not gone into details about some of these other proposals just yet, but, you know, I'd be prepared to dive in and make sure that we're doing the kind of approach that's going to be able to help our middle class, help our working families. And that's my priority.
I know you said you haven't looked at the finer details of the no tax on tips policy, but just the general premise of it. Are you open to that, especially with the whole state and local tax deduction thing where voters have not been able to use it to the full extent that they had before the former president was in office, and you came under a wave of Democrats given that trying to get it done, you haven't been able to get it done. Is no tax on tips something you could see yourself getting behind, just an idea of it? Are you at least open to that type of proposal?
I mean, look, I'm open to it if it's, you know, what we need to, you know, it's not at the top of the list of my priorities in terms of, you know, what we're trying to get done. You know, I want something that we can see across, you know, all of the middle class, you know, something that isn't as rigid based off of what type of job that you have. You know, if someone's earning, you know, a certain amount of money, you know, and it's, you know, they're having trouble in New Jersey paying the bills, you know, it doesn't matter if they're working and getting tip wages or an income wage, they're still struggling. So, you know, I want to make sure that there's fairness across the board. So, you know, my main focus is making sure that we have something that cuts across all of the middle class, gives them as much relief as possible. And that includes on the salt tax cap issue. So that's what I'm going to focus on. And then, you know, if we're able to get that, you know, I'm open to other ideas, but we want to make sure that we at least get something that cuts across all of the middle class.
Well, we'll have to see where this goes. New Jersey Democratic Senate candidate and 3rd Congressional District Congressman Andy Kim, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, that about does it for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me as always. To stay in touch with what's going on the show, all you have to do is follow me on social media, which you can do on X at @block_Joey. Again, my last name is spelled BLOCH_Joey. You can also check me out on Instagram at joey.block.39. Again, that is at joey.block.39. Now, in case you just found the show for the very first time, like, oh my God, I love the show, it's so great, but where do I find it? Well, here's what you need to do. You need to go to that browser of yours. You got to type in foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. Again, that is foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. You put that into your browser, and all the Fox Sports New Jersey podcasts are going to come up on that page. You're going to scroll down until you find in the middle with Joey Block. You're going to click on that, and all the episodes will be there. You'll see the newest one at the top and the older ones at the bottom. And we put out new episodes every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Thank you so much for listening. It has been a pleasure. We'll be back again next week with more In the Middle right here on Fox Sports New Jersey.